One man told me he had a $40 bill each month. And so it worked. Come May, high school has a lot of things going on the students want to do. Graduation, parties, dances. And for all the romanticizing of this sit-in movement, these students are still human beings. And a party is still more attractive to them than a picket line. And we began to feel the pinch on us. And so, in discussion with the students and the executive committee, we felt we'd better kind of close the thing out. We'd established two good boycotts. The drugstore had almost no Negro trade, and he was pretty well dependent on it. The dairy bar had tried to retrieve his situation by taking all his seats out and serving everybody equally. We felt we had better close it up for the summer. And so we closed our picketing the last part of May, keeping the executive committee intact in case it were needed during the summer. And in August, we got news from the dairy bar man, not written to us, mind you, but a public statement that we were all welcome. Our executive committee met promptly and wrote him a letter thanking him, suggesting that if he had any problems that we could help him with, we'd be glad to help him. And if a word from us would help him get back some trade, we'd be glad to get it back. Just to let us know. You know, human beings are so constituted that even that he couldn't do. But he couldn't quite recognize, I suppose, the part that these youngsters played in winning this kind of battle. Now let me see if I can draw from that, this recital, some things that seem to me to be make this a new approach in the South and its problem of desegregation. For the first thing, it's a new leadership. Now nearly everybody that has written on this subject, and there's been a lot of writing about it, has pointed out that this is new leadership. And it is. The old pattern of solving our racial problems in the South has been this. A few educated men, mostly professional people, school teachers, and ministers for the most part, are recognized both by Negro and white people as leaders in the community. And then when any kind of trouble arises, these leaders meet with white leaders and work the trouble out if they can. And what initiative is taken in redressing wrongs, as far as the Negro is concerned, has always been taken by these, what we call them, our respected leaders. And they have been respected, and they have done, in that pattern, a good kind of work. Now, how drastically this has been changed can be illustrated with one or two, well, at least one illustration. The chairman of the Mayor's Committee on Human Relations called me late one evening, and this man is a liberal person. He's a Quaker of long standing. He made to the school board overtures toward voluntary desegregation of our school. He is no conservative. And yet he called me one night and says, "Charlie, I have asked two of the Negro leaders to contact the executive committee and see if they won't quit picketing for a week to give us a chance to work." And I said, "Well, whom did you ask?" He named them. And I said, "Well, if you want an affirmative answer, you better not let them come. Because both of those people were at the first meeting and tried to discourage the youngsters." One of them a minister, and the other one a director of the community center. The director of the community center wouldn't let us meet in the community center, the Negro community center. We could get no church to meet in. We met in the Elks Hall. And yet, he was going to send these leaders to these young people. And he says, well, I didn't know any better. He says, I just thought they were the leaders. I said, well, they used to be. He said, well, how about you telling them? And you see, he still didn't get the point. That this is a new leadership, and you've got to deal with them and not go-betweens. So I suggested that he come himself. He says, would you get me an invitation? Some people learn hard, you see. Mind you, he was the head of a department at the university at one time. I says, no, if you want an invitation, I'll give you the chairman's telephone number, call him up. He did, and I did take him down there, because he didn't know where it was. You know, he began that meeting this way. He says, I appreciate the chance to be with you young people. I have asked two of your Negro leaders to contact you. Quick as a flash, one of the young girls says, sir, would you say Negro? Well, he didn't know what hit him. He apologized and tried to say Negro as best he could, and the students accepted that. And then he went right back to the same sentence. And he no sooner had gotten the word leader out of his mouth than somebody says, who did you ask? He gave their names and they said, they're not our leaders. Now, this is the significant thing, that it's the new thing, that we have a new leadership that will have to be dealt with in a new way. Well, I can't say this from research at all. This is a hunch. That in the southern cities, where we have had difficulty coming to some kind of satisfactory conclusion, it may have been due to the fact that the white leadership would not deal directly with those involved. I know that was true in at least two cities. They went back trying to get to these students through the same leadership that hadn't done anything about this up to now anyway. A second thing, that we've added a new weapon to our arsenal. We've always tried to use the moral weapon. Practically every religious denomination, I shouldn't say it this way, I started to say even Southern Baptists. We usually put them last, and it isn't always fair because in some things they're first. But practically every denomination, those based in the South too, have declared that segregation, according to their way of talking, is either sinful or contrary to the will of God, or some strong way they put it. And we've used a moral club on these people rather lightly, because the minister didn't take the resolution home and read it to his congregation most of the times. But we've always had that weapon in our arsenal, and we've used it some. Then in these later years, we've used the legal weapon, the courts. In this last one, we used a boycott. And I am fairly well convinced that the thing that drew our city into a solution was not the moral persuasion, though that is my stock in trade, and I will use it. I know I have to wait for years and years with only moral suasion. We had no court to go to, but we had the boycott. And it wasn't the fact that customs had changed in Chapel Hill, it's the fact that milk had fallen off Chapel Hill. And we now know that the Negro buying power is worth something.